Welcome to the Dog Classroom,
the Dog Classroom podcast. I am your co-host, Anne Marie.
And I'm your co-host, Amelia.
Like and subscribe
on Spotify and YouTube in video format. And now into the episode.
Here we go.
I'm your co-host, Amelia. And today, Anne Marie is on vacation. And we have Kelsey, our special guest. Kelsey is one of the instructors at the Dog Classroom, and we're going to talk a little bit about her and her background and all the fun things that she likes to do with her dogs, so you guys can get to know her a little bit better, and then we'll dive into some of the fun stuff.
Perfect.
Welcome, Kelsey. So why don't we start with asking a little bit about you and your background? So growing up with dogs or anything like that?
Yeah, so I did grow up with dogs. Actually, my family always had dogs, my personal family, and then also extended family. So I was always around dogs growing up, loved having them. We usually only had one at a time.
Okay.
Because we were pretty busy. But yeah, grew up around them. We had a lab when I was really young, and I love labs. They're probably my heart dog because who doesn't love a lab? And then we've had Jack Russells ever since, and they're also a lot of fun, but a lot of energy.
And now you have a pointer, right?
Yes. So apparently I just love the energy. And I do have a pointer now, and her name is Styx. And she's a lot of fun as well. So we'll talk about her a little bit more later, I guess.
Yeah, we will. So as far as growing up with dogs, I know everybody, like when myself and Emery did our intro episode and we talked about our experiences with dogs, like, so I had sort of like my crossover journey with training. Did you have any prior experience like with working with dogs or any ideas about dogs that you had?
So I guess growing up, we trained our dogs, but we didn't do a lot of training with our dogs because they were usually country dogs. They ran to their heart's content and they were tired. So they never really had any big behavioral issues because they didn't have the opportunity to have those, I guess.
Yeah.
But then when we got our most recent Jack Russell, Daisy, I was going to school for behavior analysis. And in class, we were learning about stimulus discrimination. And the prof played a video about stimulus discrimination. It was teaching a dog to match to sample. So matching an object on the ground to one that you're holding up in your hand. It was very cool. And so that was kind of my first thing, like, oh, I can apply my behavioral principles to training dogs. And so I went home during the break and I tried that. So I taught her a go to mat cue. So she would go to mat and I was trying to teach her how to match to sample. And that was kind of my first little, oh, this is a lot of fun. And the same principles I use with people can be used with dogs as well.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's a cool little intro. So when you say stimulus discrimination, I know that you and I like to get nerdy sometimes and go into the technical terms. Maybe just a brief description for the audience.
Like, so we started with tennis balls. So what I would do is have a tennis ball on the ground, tennis ball in my hand. I was teaching her just that the tennis ball in my hand meant that she should go see the tennis ball on the ground. Okay. Then we would add more than one object. So I would teach her another object, and then I would put them together, and I would ask her to match whatever was on the ground to the object in my hand. So I was teaching her that the stimulus, which was in my hand there, to discriminate between two of them.
Okay.
So discriminate between two.
So you had on the floor, you had a ball and you had a bone, and you pick up the ball, you want her to touch the ball.
Yeah.
Pick up the bone, you want her to touch the bone.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And really so cool. she's having to discriminate between what's in my hand and what she has in front of her and having to go
and
get
that
object.
And she was able to do that.
Yes, she was. It took her a little while, but she just wanted the treats really initially. And then we worked through that and she had a good time doing it.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So moving on from there, you mentioned that you were in school. So your education, let's talk a little bit about that. So what did you do school-wise?
So school, I was in high school. I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I was done high school. And so I kind of just went the route that a lot of people go. I said, okay, nursing, tried that for a little while. Wasn't my thing. I went to applied behavior analysis. I liked that a lot. Applied biomolecular sciences. And that was fun too. But while I was doing that, I got into support work, working with older people and people with disabilities. And I really enjoyed that. So I got into developmental services work after that. And it was there that I actually learned about behavioral analysis and how to use, you know, the principles of behavior, principles of learning to influence behaviors and to teach people skills and everything. And I had a big passion for that. And I got to apply it in a lot of different settings, addictions and mental health, school settings. Lots of different scenarios. And I thought, this is really cool. This is something I want to learn more about. And so I started looking into programs, and George Brown College had a program in applied behavior analysis. And so that's kind of what I decided to go into. So I finished my diploma and I went to George Brown College for applied behavior analysis to learn more about the science of behavior.
Yeah. So when you were, I think you were home, maybe because of COVID or some reason, when you started training with sticks.
Yes. So
when did that all happen? What's the timeline here?
Okay. So I started, it was pre-COVID. I started my program, I think 2018, I want to say. And I was in school there for 2 years. And then 2020 hit. I was in the middle of my second year. And they said, oh, school's shutting down for the time being. Everybody go to your dorms. And so I lived in my dorm for a couple of weeks. My parents came and picked me up, and we moved me back to Thunder Bay. And that's where I stayed for the next 2 years. And as everybody knows, lockdown happened. Not a lot to do in lockdown. And my partner was working a lot. So I spent a lot of time by myself. And so I was kind of on, I'm like, oh, I really would like to get my own dog, because we had my family's dog living with my family. But I really wanted to get my own dog. So I said, can we get a dog? Can we get a dog? And then I went to, can we get a cat? And that's when he said, okay, maybe we can foster dogs. So we looked at fostering dogs. We applied to foster, and we ended up getting a foster dog. And she was lovely. We really loved her. She was a great dog. She did have some behavioral issues. And at the time, I didn't know a lot about training with behavioral issues. But she was a great dog for us. And in the house, she did great. She loved to work. She was a Border Collie, like Spaniel mix. And so she absolutely loved working. She did have some problems with fear biting and like fast reaches and everything.
Okay.
And we were working on it. And we did actually want to keep her. We thought, okay, she's a great dog. But we thought about it a little bit more, because we were thinking, you know, she's a great dog with us, but you can't trust her around other people. Like, you always have to be watching her and everything. And you could work through that. But there comes a point where you want to be able to leave your dog with other people for a certain amount of time and not have them reaching, yeah. Especially children. We have a lot of kids in our life. And I would never want to put a dog in a scenario where they're uncomfortable around a kid and feel that they have to snap. So we thought, okay, I don't know if we're the best family to be keeping this dog. And as it turned out, we weren't, because a few weeks later, a family applied to adopt her. They adopted her, and she has like 5 acres to run now. She's having a great time, aww, living her best life.
Love that when the fosters work out so well.
Right. And I was like, okay, we knew we loved her, but we weren't the right home for her.
Yeah, and I've totally had that with some foster dogs in the past as well, where I'm like, I totally, like, you have this connection with the dog and you love them, but sometimes, you know, it's a hard thing to admit when you're not the right person or the right home for that dog.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important that people can see, you know, that happens to all of us. That happens to you too, right?
Yeah.
So after you fostered, you sort of thought about getting a puppy, or what happened there?
Well, my parents were mentioning that, okay, if you guys really do want a puppy, we're willing to get you the puppy for a Christmas present. We were like, okay, this is great. And so we started looking at kind of what puppy we were interested in getting, because there's so many dogs out there, so many breeds. The other thing you had going against you in COVID is that everybody was getting a puppy. Everybody and their mom was getting a puppy. And so there weren't actually a lot of puppies available at the time, especially through rescues, because that was our first avenue, was, okay, let's look at the rescues. Looking for puppies, they didn't have a lot. Mm-hmm. So we thought, okay, we'll look at breeders. And even breeders, like so many of them had wait lists and stuff. And we started, mm-hmm, kind of thinking, what kind of dog do we want to get? Because one of the biggest things for me is you want a dog that's going to fit your lifestyle and fit in with you. So we started thinking about our lifestyle. And growing up with Jack Russells, I thought, okay, I love a Jack Russell. I do love my Jack Russell. But I thought, I kind of want something different and maybe a large-sized dog. And I know my partner also wanted a large-sized dog. So we were looking into large breed dogs. I said, I love Labs. Like I said, they're my heart dog. But we were living in a really small apartment at the time. And we thought, okay, 90-pound lab in a 2-bedroom apartment, not the best mix either. Now, I did get a pointer, but they are smaller.
I was thinking it. I didn't say it, but I was thinking it.
Yeah. So we're looking around. We looked at beagles. We looked at labs. We looked everywhere. And I said, I'd always had a love for pointers ever since I watched the Westminster Kennel Club show. And I saw, I think it was the 2017 winner who was a pointer. And I thought, that's a beautiful dog. I love the look of them. And so I did a little bit more research into them. And if you research pointers, you find out they're high energy dogs. They're not the type of dog that you do a walk around the block with and that's it. And we thought, and we're pretty active people, and we were willing to take on the high energy dog. We're willing to do the training that came with it. And I messaged my sister. I said, we're looking for dogs. And she actually sent me, I told her some breeds we're looking for. And she sent me, oh, my friend of mine is having a litter of German short-haired pointers. He's got one left. She's 14 weeks old. She's ready to go to her home. And we thought, oh my gosh, this is like fate. So we said, yeah, sure. So we got in contact with them. We went and picked her up. And she's been a great dog ever since.
Miss Sticks. Yeah. She is right there on the website. So on our website, we have the Meet the Team page. And Kelsey is actually on there with her description. And you can see a picture of her beautiful pointer Sticks, who is now almost
two and a half. And I did say she's been a great dog ever since, but I'm not going to lie, we had some challenges.
There were some challenges. So yeah. Let's take a step back and go into, how did you start training dogs?
Well, I knew as soon as we got a dog that I wanted to get the dog in classes, because socialization and just learning from certified trainers, through my background in applied behavior analysis, I did have some good knowledge on behavioral aspects, how to use reinforcement, how to apply it effectively. Mm-hmm. But I felt I was missing that piece on dogs specifically. And so I thought I would love to get some more feedback. So I signed up at the dog classroom for classes with Anne-Marie, and I was really excited to go to classes, but we had to wait a little while, and I was really nervous about that. But we went to classes, and we had a rough time, actually. We had a rough go of it initially. Okay. So Sticks, as a young dog, was not food motivated. She didn't want to take treats. And I went in the first day with my clicker and my bag of dog food. And I said, we're going to work for kibble. We're going to have a great time. And, you know, she's going to do everything I ask of her. And I don't think we did a single thing that first class except for hand targets. Because I was just, you know, I didn't have anything to motivate her with. So I talked to Emery. I was like, okay, you know, how's this going? Like, what can I do? How can I get her to do more work? And she said, you have to motivate her a little bit. So I found more motivators. I found some better treats for her. I found some cheese, and we eventually got some more done. Maybe I'll talk a little bit more about that later. And I think it was during our second round of classes, or at the end of our first one, Anne-Marie approached me and asked if I'd ever thought about becoming a dog trainer. And I said, well, actually, I was thinking of asking you about it because I was really interested in applying the concept I learned in school to dogs specifically. Because as I went through her course, beginning with basics, I found that a lot of the things were transferable, and a lot of the things that I learned in school I could do with Sticks, and I could see results. And so I was doing those things, and I guess she noticed.
Well, and I know we've talked about this on the podcast before as well, but the way that we made our programs and the way that we train our dogs is based on those principles of behavior, you know, behavior analysis. And and the same idea that, you know, the operant conditioning, the classical conditioning, I know we talked about that before, way back in season one, so I won't get into it. But a lot of that, yes, the research was sort of done with animals, but it was done about people, right?
Yeah, so you have the experimental analysis of behavior, which is applying behavioral analysis to animals. And usually everything starts out there. And Skinner's initial work was on pigeons, using a Skinner box, seeing if pigeons would continue to press a button to receive some food out of a little dispenser. And they did. And so that's your positive reinforcement, right? Mm-hmm. Press the button, you get some food. You're going to press the button again because you want some more of that food. And so reinforcement does work. It is effective.
Mm-hmm. And you're using the same principles when, you know, you're learning in school about teaching children or, you know, maybe older adults who have lost some abilities, right, and teaching them how to do certain things again.
Absolutely. And, like, everybody learns better when they're motivated to work. And positive reinforcement is really motivating for people because you know that your actions are going to be reinforced. Everybody learns via positive reinforcement. You can't learn via punishment at all. Same thing with dogs. They need to be.
Right. Yeah. So when Anne-Marie had approached you and said, you know, have you ever thought about dog training? Where did that conversation lead? You ended up.
So she approached me. I said, I'm definitely interested. And I sent her an email confirming that. And she said, you can come shadow Amelia in classes. So I came to one of your classes.
That's me.
and I think it was a next step class or something like that. That I came to watch. I don't know, this was a little while ago now.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting to watch you teach. And I also got to get a different perspective on the teaching of that class because everybody, I think all of the instructors teach a little bit differently at the dog classroom. And so I got to see the way you teach classes and compare that with the way Emery teach classes. And I thought, okay, everybody kind of has their own way of doing this. And
yeah, and we're all using the same principles. We're all teaching the same curriculum, but we all have a different delivery, which I really like.
Yeah.
And now you have sort of your, we all call them spiels, like your spiel that you do for each exercise. And, you know, Trainer Mike has a different spiel for his exercises. You guys will hear from him on the podcast later on as well. So, yeah, I think that's really good that you got to come and sort of learn and just see if this was something that was going to work for you.
Yeah.
And I know from my perspective, because obviously you started shadowing with me, your mechanical skills were really good, right? Like the technical skills of when to treat and figuring out different behaviors and watching, you know, the ways that people were interacting with their dogs. So having that already be sort of in your skill set really helped you out there.
Right. I think so too, yeah, because a lot of people don't realize with positive reinforcement, things like timing are important. The type of reinforcer you're using with the dog is important. And there's these really little aspects about using reinforcement that a lot of people don't know are there.
Yeah.
And so I think I did know a little bit more because of my schooling of how to apply that, right? So you want to reinforce behavior as quickly as you can. And so I had my clicker so that I could click the exact moment my dog did what I wanted her to do, and I could then get the treat out and give it to her.
Yeah.
And I came in with a pretty good basis of that. It was you guys who gave me the dog-specific things related to learning that I needed to know.
But I think, too, and I say this to clients all the time, is when I have a dog that's really struggling for, you know, motivation-wise, right? So people are saying I can't find a treat that they like, or, you know, they don't like treats or whatever. I'm like, here, talk to Kelsey, because you had to get very creative.
Yeah, so I did talk about sticks a little bit and the fact that she wasn't very food motivated. And even when we went to cheese initially, it was sometimes cheese was great, but she is a pointer, which is a breed with a high prey drive. And as such, she has a lot of motivators outside of me that she's interested in. So it was almost like if she couldn't get the motivation she was looking for from me or the reinforcement, she was going to look elsewhere for it. And that's totally what everybody does, right? If you're not getting reinforcements from somewhere, you're going to behave differently or look somewhere else for your reinforcement. And so I had to get really creative and find out what drives this dog. So I know she's got a high prey drive. So how can I work that into my training? And so scent work was a big part of that, I think. Mm-hmm. And I say this when I'm teaching scent work all the time, is this was the first class where I actually got to connect with my dog. And I found that our training really was taken to the next level and found that she enjoyed training with me. So beginning with basics, next step were great. We got to work on the basics, and we did great with those at home. But when she was confronted with all those extra motivators, like the other dogs or other people in the room, she struggled. When we did scent games, I got to engage with her with training in a way that she enjoyed. And I think that really made all the difference for us in
that
our training.
That makes sense. So I'm thinking about it in my head, and you're saying, you know, the sort of obedience curriculum is more things that we enjoy, that we want to do. And the scent games was more something that she enjoys. So I know that when you started, I was a certified scent games instructor, and I started sort of the scent games program initially. And it's just, you know, it's not necessarily my passion. And I remember you talking about it a lot. So I sort of ended up handing that to you. You shadowed it a little bit, and then you sort of started to develop a new curriculum of your own, right? And teaching now multiple levels of different scent games classes.
Yeah, so actually, I think when Emery initially approached me, she did mention she was looking for a scent class instructor, and I had mentioned that I was interested in gun dog training, owning a gun dog, and everything. And so I said I'd be definitely interested in that. So I took it from you, and you passed on the curriculum to me once we had learned from you a little bit. And I really enjoyed teaching scent work, and I think I prefer taking a pet owner way of things about it. So I know there's competition scent work, there's barn hunt and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
And that's great. And if you want to compete in scent work, that's amazing. But I think it's really valuable to pet owners as a way to tire out their dogs and also build their relationships. And I think that's where my interest lies in scent work, is I want to teach pet owners how to do something fun with their dogs, maybe how to do something that's not just taking a walk with them, and how to engage with them and just have fun, build their relationship through scent work. So I do the level one scent work, which is a lot of fun. It's really games-based. So I like to train them on the basics, you know, learning to search, learning to use their noses, learning to work as a team. And then I like to set up stations and different types of scent work and searches. So different arrangements and everything like that.
Yeah, and they really build their confidence through those different arrangements so that you can make the games a little bit more exciting. Because I know in the beginning, it seems like, I remember when I took my first scent work class, I was like, this is a little bit boring, right? Like, you're just kind of watching your dog sniff. But as you see the confidence building and you see the joy that they're getting out of it, then you start to enjoy it as well because you're doing something with them that they really like.
Absolutely. And I find that with the dogs that I watch in scent work all the time is you start to see them really come out of their shell a little bit, and they learn to enjoy working for their owner. And so you get dogs who the first day they come into class, they're really excited. They're running around at the end of the leash. They're trying to get to the other dogs. And then you teach them the game. And by week three, they come in and they're really ready to search. So they're on their mat. They're waiting for their owners to set up a search. Mm-hmm. And then they're doing their start lamb routine. They're getting sent to search. As soon as you release them after they're done finding everything, they're back to their mat. And so it really helps build focus with people too. Well, like with the dogs more so. And teach people that their dogs don't just have to be at the end of the leash. They can do other things.
Yeah, and even for reactive dogs, like I know you do the online scent work at home, right?
Yeah.
Scent Games at Home is a webinar that Kelsey offers sometimes. And for dogs that maybe, you know, don't do well in a group class full of other dogs, or you prefer to work in the comfort of your own home, so that's also an option for them.
For sure. And even the Scent Games class, I think I've had a couple rounds right now recently with reactive dogs, but I had one session with all reactive dogs, but everybody would come every week with their dogs. We'd give everybody space getting down the stairs. Once everyone was working, you didn't hear a peep out of them. No one was reacting because everyone was doing an activity they enjoyed together.
Yeah, and I mean, we could do an entire episode on scent work and all the different things that goes on in the dog's brain when they're engaging those senses, but we don't have that much time.
No.
So we will move on to Retrieve, which is a class that you developed. I know we had tons of clients that were asking about Retrieve for a number of different reasons, right?
Yeah.
And so you ended up developing a curriculum around that. Maybe you want to talk briefly about the class?
So, yeah, I guess I'll start where I got started in retrieving. Mm-hmm. So with Styx, I had wanted to do gun dog training with her, and I found that we were struggling a little bit with that, and especially with retrieving. So pointers are bred to point, and yes, they can retrieve. But when we played fetch, she would want to run, show me where the ball was, and then expected me to go get it and throw it again. And I thought, this isn't really working for me. I want to change the way we're doing this. And so I looked at teaching her to retrieve. And initially, it was a little bit of a struggle. So I took some courses on retrieving and teaching a retrieve to hand using the clicker. I've read quite a few books on it by now. And so my course is designed after everything that I took in terms of education and also what I did with my own dog. And so we teach a clicker retrieve in the retrieving class. We can use verbal yeses, but I prefer the clicker because it's a lot more accurate. And I find when you teach it this way, using positive reinforcement, making it almost a game for the dog to play and using shaping, you can really teach any dog to retrieve. Even dogs who didn't like to retrieve before, they can learn the skill too.
Well, Kelsey taught my Chihuahua to retrieve. And I know, I mean, you've had some Huskies in class.
Yeah.
You've had lots of different breeds.
Yeah, we've got a Bouvier right now. We've got a lot of different breeds.
Yeah, and so it's not just something that's for labs, right? I think a lot of people think retrieve and they go, oh, I don't have a golden retriever, you know, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't take that class.
It can be any type of dog, whether they like retrieving already or they don't. If they don't like retrieving, it might just take them a little bit longer to learn. So you have to learn to be patient with them. But I think that's the fun of training with your dog is watching them learn. And retrieve class, you really get to watch them learn the skill at each little step. It's really interesting.
Beautiful. And I know that's a very intensive course, but it's a lot of fun.
Yes.
The homework is a lot. Kelsey designed it. It's homework booklets.
Yes. Right? So if you've ever taken a class with me that I've designed, my homework can be a little bit intense because I really like to break down the skills. And retrieving especially, people have to do the homework. Otherwise, the dog's not going to learn to retrieve.
Yeah.
And so there is an entire manual that I've put together of all the little retrieving skills now, and then individual week's homework telling you what to do from that manual. So you will have to do the work, but it's all broken down for you, and you can do it if you're willing to. So I don't like to intimidate people with it, but it is, yeah.
Yeah, we're just being realistic.
Yeah.
So to sort of wrap it up, why don't we just go back to briefly, you know, your education, your experience. How do you feel like you put all those things together in order to best serve your clients?
I think it's a really good question. I think using my education, I'm able to, we learned a lot about dissemination of our behavior analytic principles in school.
In English, please.
So just the things that we use to modify behavior and to teach behaviors and everything, all those technical terms, we learn how to translate them to mediators or people who are going to be carrying out plans that we make for them. And so I think I've taken a lot of that in terms of how I explain things to clients. I like to approach things by breaking every little skill down. So big fan of shaping and chaining and all that. I guess shaping, when you're building behaviors up step by step, you're reinforcing small steps that lead to a bigger behavior. And chaining is when you're breaking behavior down into components and adding those components together at the end. And in terms of working with the people, I like to make sure that people have a really detailed explanation of what they should do for each exercise that I give them. So I like to say, you know, we're going to do step one, you're going to take a treat. Step two, you're going to put it to the dog's nose and bring it up above their head. Step three, their butt's going to hit the ground, and that's when you're going to give the reinforcement. And I like to do each little step like that because I think people learn really well when you break things down for them.
Yeah, and I think that it works really well for you, and it obviously it works really well for your clients as well, yeah, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being our special guest.
Thank you.
I'm happy to be here. We'll definitely have you back again for our next episode, which is on working dogs.
Beautiful.
Thank you so much for coming on and being our special guest. For all of our listeners out there, if you're interested in connecting with Kelsey, taking one of her courses, you can check out our website, thedogclassroom.com. She's teaching scent games. She's teaching retrieve. She also offers walk and train services and a very limited number of board and train services. So if you're interested in any of that, you can connect with her at thedogclassroom@tbeitel.net.